you know, we shouldn't be killing people. But if you think about eating someone who's already dead, who's died of natural causes, that's, there's kind of a line there too, between killing someone and eating them versus eating someone who's died of natural causes. Is that different morally? Is that less bad? And what I kind of discovered in my research, really, there's really like three different types of cannibalism.
Hi, and welcome to Taboo with Mimi, the podcast that talks about anything and everything, really, that is taboo in this world. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. No. But seriously, I go around the world because I'm a digital nomad, and I interview people from different cultures and ask them about their taboos. Why? Because it's time to talk about them. Some things will hopefully make you think. Others will maybe gross you out. But most things will be something you can relate to. So there you have it. Welcome to Taboo with Mimi.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Taboo with Mimi. I am here joined today with a new special guest all the way from the US. Is it right?
That's correct. I'm in North Carolina.
North Carolina. I am here with Shay. Welcome. Who are you, Shay?
My name is Shay LaFontaine. I'm from North Carolina in the United States. I'm a former teacher, actually. I taught Spanish for a year, and then I taught fourth grade for 7 years. And then at that point, I kind of pivoted, and now I create educational resources, lesson materials for other teachers, and sell those on an online platform. And I've been able to make a business out of that, which has been amazing, and kind of freed up some time for me to also pursue some passions of mine. I'm kind of a history buff, so I started a history podcast called History Fix that sort of, I try to uncover kind of lesser known history, but also sort of correct common misconceptions about history. That's like the fix part of the History Fix. So that's been like a really amazing, just creative outlet for me. It's been kind of a passion project, and I love it so much.
That's amazing. It's amazing that also you can live with your passion, because that's like not something that a lot of us can do as much. So you have a podcast and you talk about history, you said, and I want to get into exactly what we're going to talk today, kind of right away, which is cannibalism. How did you stumble upon like this topic? How did this come to you?
Okay, good question. So every episode is like a different topic. Like I have one about the Titanic, and I have one about the wives of Henry VIII, and I have one about rats, and just like very, you know, every episode's a different story, really. Every single topic, I sit down and I start digging into it, and it's like just opens up like a can of worms, every single one. And it's just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. I had no idea. And all these interesting different avenues that it takes me down. It's really wild how much I don't know. And then I'm like, well, if I don't know this, you know, my listeners probably don't either. And it's just, it's been really interesting. I've learned so much in researching cannibalism. I don't remember exactly, you know, it's just something that everyone has such a widespread aversion to it. Like you think about cannibalism, you think about eating another human being, and it's like, oh, that's wrong and gross. And you get like this instant, like icky feeling. And it kind of brings to mind, it's very like savage and like brutal and violent. But then at the same time, like I know that there have been people, cultures throughout history who practice cannibalism in a way that isn't savage and violent and brutal. And for them, it wasn't a taboo and it wasn't wrong. So I was like, okay, where does this disconnect? How did it become such a wrong, like fundamentally wrong thing in most people's minds? So I really wanted to get to the bottom of where the taboo came from, really, for cannibalism. Like, what's the history behind that? How did that story end up getting written that way? You know, as opposed to all of us thinking it's fine and, you know, it being a part of the widespread mainstream culture. So I really, for me, I guess it was just a topic that I think is really interesting. And it's something that most people, yeah, I think they just kind of have this innate aversion to, but no one really knows where that came from. So that's kind of like, it's kind of the whole purpose of History Fix, is like getting to the bottom of like, what really happened here?
That is super interesting. I mean, first of all, I love that you're just sort of researching different history things, because yes, it's true. Like, I feel like we don't know about a lot of things. I feel like also my history, and I did study a little bit in the US, I know like a lot of the history there is very much America or the Americas centered. And for example, we study a lot of European history, a little bit of of history of the Americas when it comes from the colonies, whatever, but we don't study much about the Asian. Like, I'm in Bali right now. Like, I don't know almost anything about the history of Asia or just the history of things. So I think history is absolutely super important. And it also helps to explain the present.
I'm trying to push myself to do more. Like I said earlier, I was like, the Titanic, the Wives of Henry VIII. It's like very like Western history. I'm doing a lot of European, a lot of American, and I really want to do more of like Asian, African, that sort of thing. That's kind of like a goal of mine. So I know what you mean. Yeah, it's not something that Western culture is very familiar with. So a lot of potential episodes there.
Absolutely. I think what really was curious about the topic is when we talked about this, you said like, oh, I'd love to talk about cannibalism. I think it's really, really interesting because I feel like we eat meat. I personally decided not to. I stopped eating meat a very long time ago. But we as culture, as humans, we eat meat. And I'm trying not to go down like the dangerous road, but I feel like we select the meat that we decide to eat. For example, I grew up eating some very interesting type of meat. In Italy, for example, we eat some meat that I've later found out that other cultures don't eat. Like we eat horses, we eat rabbits, we eat frogs, we eat snails, like stuff like that. And when you go to other places, people are like disgusted, like, oh my God. Whatever, when you come to Asia, for example, if you go to India, like you're not supposed to eat like beef. For them, they are holy. Or here in, I mean, I know in China, but also here, unfortunately, in Indonesia, they're trying to ban it, but still people eat dogs, for example. And it's just like, for me, like, if you eat meat, you eat meat. Like, it doesn't really matter. Like, a lot of people say, oh, no, dogs now, but cow, yes. And to me, that it's like just cultural. Of course, when it comes to humans, it's like a different kind of situation, because even those that eat meat and would eat every type of meat, and I have absolutely no problem with eating meat, when it comes to cannibalism, which is eating another human, and mind you, we are animals, they are like, oh, gross.
Yeah. And I think there is a distinction between, like, I think we can all agree that like killing a human and eating them, like that's wrong. You know, we shouldn't be killing people. But if you think about eating someone who's already dead, who's died of natural, there's kind of a line there too between like killing someone and eating them versus eating someone who's died of natural causes. Is that different morally? Is that less bad? And what I kind of discovered in my research, really, there's really like three different types of cannibalism. It gets pretty, you know, there's different avenues that it goes down. So there's nutritional cannibalism, which is typically in like a starvation type of situation. There's several examples of this throughout history that I go into in my cannibalism episode, but that are really crazy stories, really, of people in, you know, life and death situations, a lot of shipwrecks. The Donner Party is one that's sort of well known from American history. There was a plane wreck in the Andes Mountains in the 70s. And so these people are starving to death and they're faced with the decision of like, we're either going to die or we're going to like eat this guy who's already dead. Or in some cases, they actually had to kill people and eat them in order to survive. And so that's what's called nutritional cannibalism. Or like, I think of it as like survival cannibalism. And then there's ritual cannibalism, which is in a culture where it's part of their culture, it's part of their customs, and it's not actually viewed as taboo. It's just kind of part of how they do things. And so there are examples of that sort of throughout. I mean, dating far back, there was this story about how, you know, they found these remains in this cave. It's called Goff's Cave in Somerset, England. And it's like 14,700 years old. And how they found these bones that had clearly been cannibalized. You know, they have like intentional cut marks and signs of cooking. They have like tooth marks on them. But then they found where they had the skulls. They had like intricately shaped the skulls into like cups and bowls. And they had like made these really artistic carvings on like the arm bones. And there's all these horse bones in the cave too. So they're like, well, they weren't starving. They had a bunch of horses to eat. And, you know, starving people don't create art. They're not like carving patterns on bones and crafting skull cups. So clearly this was ritual cannibalism. This was like part of their culture. To them, it wasn't like a bad or a wrong thing. It wasn't taboo. And that's the one that really interests me the most, because the taboo didn't exist for them. And I really wanted to get to the bottom of like, where did this taboo come from? Why are these people not viewing it as bad? Why do we all now view it as bad? And then the third type is pathological, which would be like your, you know, like a serial killer, a murderer who then eats their victim. So really, like, for the nutritional and the pathological, it is wrong. It's very wrong. One group is forced to do it. The other is, like, doing it because it's wrong, because they get some kind of ego boost out of, like, the shock value, the depravity of doing this really shocking, horrible thing. And so it's like that one group, the ritual group, that I'm like, oh, it's not actually wrong for them. You know, it's just kind of part of how things are done. So I found that really interesting, the sort of, like, different categories of cannibalism.
Absolutely. I am blown away because, I mean, obviously, when you think about it and you describe them like this, it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I was like, as we were going over it, I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But I feel like the one big idea that we have in our mind is a psychopath that kills and eats people because something is wrong, right, in their brain or whatever. So can we go over the categories a little bit better? I am so interested in all of this. And of course, like, we will also, like, link your podcast episode in the description below. And so that people, if want to listen to it in more in detail, they'll be able to do it. Because I feel like the first one is the one that we kind of excuse, quote unquote, like, that we say, like, oh, it makes sense because they had no choice and therefore they had to do it. Do you know any, like, you mentioned something briefly, but have you read about any stories of any people that survived?
Yeah, so I talk about four different examples in the podcast episode. The first one, the Raft of the Medusa, which was a French ship that ran aground off the coast of Africa, and they didn't have enough lifeboats. So they built this raft for the folks who wouldn't fit in the lifeboats. The whole situation was very ill-planned. It was very panicked, and it just kind of erupted into this. I mean, they were only on this raft for 15 days, 150 people on the raft. By the end of the 15 days, when they were rescued, there were only 15 people left. But a lot of that was just fighting amongst themselves. They didn't have enough food, and so they're fighting on the raft. They're dying. They're killing each other on the raft, and they're eating the dead. And you think, like, you know, it's only 15 days. You guys, this, we could have done. And I mean, the first day, like, 25 people were killed or thrown overboard in this, like, immediate violence. So that one is a really interesting look at just, like, what happens to humans in these, like, panicked kind of life and death situations, because they just, like, really did not handle it well. One of the most interesting for me was the story of, it was a whaling ship called the Essex, and it's actually the inspiration for the book Moby Dick about, you know, whaling. The author of that book actually met the captain of the Essex, and he kind of, like, relayed this story. And Moby Dick doesn't go into all the horrors of the actual story is, like, way crazier than the book. But basically, they're whaling. They're trying to catch whales, and the ship gets struck by a whale, and it's irreparably damaged. Which, the irony of, like, hunting whales and then a whale, like, destroys your ship. And so it's irreparably damaged. They have to abandon ship. They get in the lifeboats. They're, like, pretty much in the middle of the Pacific. They're, like, 2,000 miles west of Ecuador. They're in, like, the middle of the Pacific Ocean. So the Medusa and the Essex were both in the 1800s, sort of early to mid 1800s. And so with this one, I find it so ironic. So they, instead of going to some of these nearby islands in their lifeboats, they just kind of head south into, like, nothingness, because they were worried that they would encounter cannibals on the islands. And then the irony of that is they end up just kind of in the middle of the ocean. So a few of the boats, you know, people just died, natural causes, starvation, whatever, exposure, dehydration, and they ended up having to eat the dead. One of the boats, the boat that actually had the captain in it, no one was dead, but they're, like, all starving and going to die. And they're like, okay, we have to kill someone and eat them. And so they end up, like, drawing straws to see who will be killed and eaten. And it ends up actually being the captain's cousin who draws the short straw, and they shoot him and they eat him. And they actually ended up getting rescued. And when they were rescued, you know, the rescue ship reported that they were, like, sucking on the bones and, like, shoving them into their pockets as they were being pulled aboard. So even though, like, they were safe, they were rescued, they're still kind of, like, you know, still trying to, like, eat the man's cousin. They're still trying to eat him. That one was really wild. And then I also talk about the Donner Party, which was a group of settlers, American settlers, who were moving to California. So they're crossing you know, this is when America was just basically the East Coast. And so they're crossing on foot with like covered wagons. They're crossing the whole country and they are trying to get to California before winter because they're passing through like some really mountainous regions and it's kind of impassable during the winter when it snows. And they get some bad advice. Someone tells them about this shortcut that ends up not being a shortcut at all. It's like 125 miles longer than they were told. And it's very difficult. They've got wagons and they have all these cows and it's like impossible to get through. And they get kind of like held up trying to get through this shortcut. And then the winter comes and it's snowing. They lose a bunch of their cows like run off or die. And they end up having to resort to eating the dead as well. Actually, a small group of them kind of went on ahead trying to make it to California to get like a rescue party. And several of them died. They ate the dead. And then what I found really crazy, they had a couple of Native American like guides with them who were like, no, we're not going to eat the dead. Like it's just culturally, religiously, like we're not where we would rather die. Like we're not going to do it. And they actually tried to run away and they shot them and ate them. So that was like, just very, and these are, you know, these are men and women and children. These are like hardened soldiers or sailors. These are like normal people and just in just complete desperation. I mean, it's, and you know, and that's what I'm saying about the two different, like, I kind of understand like, well, this guy's dead and I'm starving. It's meat. Let's eat it. But it's like, then you think about, you know, killing someone to eat them. It's just like a totally different level of.
Do you have any more, like, do you remember reading about any more recent examples of anything like that, that where people had to kill each other because they were starving to death, basically?
So one more recent, and they didn't kill each other in this one, but the sort of final example that I really looked into was the rugby team from Uruguay in the 1970s. And they were flying, and there's a movie about, I can't remember what the movie's called. I know there's a movie about this, but they were in a plane crash over the Andes. And I think it was something like 16 people died in the crash and another like 20 some survived. And they, you know, they get to a point where, you know, they're in the Andes mountains. It's like snowy. There's, you know, they don't have like weapons to hunt or anything. There's nothing to eat. So they end up having to eat the dead. And they start with the pilot because they didn't know the pilot. You know, they're like, we don't know this guy. There's no like sentimental attachment. They eat him first. But, you know, after that, then it's like, well, the rest of these guys are our friends. They're our teammates, but we still have to eat. And so they end up eating, you know, the rest of the dead. And they were actually out there for, I think it was like 72 days before they were rescued. And it, I mean, it's really wild. Like there's a photograph of them, like at the time that they were rescued and they're like kind of sitting out next to the wreckage of the plane. And you can see like, there's like a spine next to a guy, just like a whole spine. And it's just like, I have goosebumps. It's like, it was like his friend. And it's really wild. And that was in like the 70s, you know, it's not that long ago. And so it's just like, it really, I can't imagine being in a situation like that. But I understand at the same time, it's like, well, you know, what would you do? Would you just die or would you eat this guy? You know, so it's really wild.
I wonder, I don't know if you researched this, but I just wonder what are the like implications in terms of like law enforcement in this kind of cases.
Yeah, I didn't look too far into that. But I do remember listening to a podcast, and I don't remember which, because I listen to a lot of history podcasts too. I don't remember which one it was, but they were talking about a case similar to the Essex situation where they had to like draw, you know, they're in a lifeboat and I don't remember the name of the shipwreck, but they're in a lifeboat and they have to decide, who are we going to kill? We need to kill one of us so that the rest of us will survive. And they actually did face like some legal, once the survivors made it back, I know that there was like a trial and, you know, they had to decide like, well, was this warranted? Was it necessary? Is it murder? Or was it like, you know, is it excusable? And then saying, well, with the Raft of the Medusa, I know the captain of that ship, he was a terrible leader. Like that was just such a hot mess. And he ended up on the lifeboat with, you know, all these other people on the raft where everything was getting crazy, but he faced a lot of, there were trials and things about like just his poor leadership. So I know that that is a thing. I didn't go too deep into the legal side of it. I know that, you know, there are legal implications. I think for the most part, you know, like with the plane crash, it's like, they didn't actually kill anyone, but it's just kind of like you did what you had to do. How can we judge it in a court of law? Who's to say? Because we've never been in that situation, you know. But yeah.
So very interesting. And then the second type of cannibalism, I think, is the one that we show the most in movies, right? That's like the one of like the crazy indigenous people, usually. Crazy tribe of people in the forest or somewhere that you find that, oh, well, because it's their culture, which is what you described, it's not like a taboo for them. They just eat humans. And sometimes they do rituals around it and all this type of things, right?
Right. So that one's very interesting to me because, like I said, it's not a taboo for them, you know, and kind of part of my goal was like, where's the taboo coming from? So with that one, you see it a lot in kind of like remote places. There were islands in the Caribbean where people practice cannibalism. There were certain indigenous groups in Brazil, one in particular called the Wari, which I might come back to that because that was something that like I found super interesting. And then there were reports of it near India and like the Andaman Islands. And part of that, so the thing about that, like you said, this kind of like violent, tribal, savage, brutal, a lot of that, though, I think is a bit of a misconception because it comes from European reports. When Europeans are exploring and settling in the Americas or, you know, wherever else, they're the ones, there's no firsthand accounts of an indigenous person from the Caribbean in the 1500s, 1400s or whatever. We don't know their side of the story. So it's all a very one-sided account and also very biased because they have these very strong motives. They want it to be portrayed a certain way because there's something to get out of it. So first of all, Christopher Columbus, he came up with the term cannibal. He basically, I mean, that he made up that word cannibal. He is really the one who created that perception of like the violent, tribal, brutal, sort of animalistic. He really created that in his reports. So there was already a taboo surrounding it before that. In like ancient Roman and Greek myths, they had these sort of creatures called cynocephali that were like these dog-headed men, like men with dog heads that were rumored to live in India, and there were these cannibal, you know, violent cannibal man eaters. And so there was sort of these myths created by the Greeks and Romans that kind of started the idea that it was bad or wrong or you know, they were like the villains. But really, really Christopher Columbus took it to the next level. So he arrived in the Caribbean in the late 1400s. And on his first voyage, he's reporting back. So he was Italian, but he sailed for Spain. So he was sent by Ferdinand and Isabella of Spain. And on his first trip, he's reporting, you know, it's great. These people are very kind and they are willing to convert to Christianity. They're peaceful. You know, this is a go. This is a great place for us to settle because the native people here are open to it and they're great. And so that's sort of like the report of his first trip. And then he kind of realizes like, you know, where's all the gold? I kind of thought I'd come over here and there would be all this silver and gold and, you know, they'd be lavishing me with all these riches and there doesn't seem to be any gold here. And so he realizes like, all right, we need to pivot. And he introduced sugarcane to the Caribbean. He came up with the term cannibal and he introduced sugarcane to the Caribbean. And his new plan is, well, let's plant sugar. Let's have sugar plantations. Sugar was an extremely valuable trade commodity. They called it white gold. It was extremely expensive and you could make a lot of money selling sugar. So that was kind of like his backup plan. Once he realized there wasn't gold, he decided we're going to set up sugar plantations and we're going to sell white gold. But to do that, sugar is extremely labor intensive to plant and harvest. It all has to be done within a really short period of time before it rots. And so you have to have like this really massive labor force in order to set up sugar plantations. So he's like, okay, we need to enslave the indigenous people. That's the only way. We have to enslave them so that we can do this sugar plan. And so he goes to the queen, he goes to Isabella, and he's like, let's do sugar. We just need to enslave these people. And she was very anti-slavery. She was extremely Catholic. She was very Christian. She thought that it went against Christianity and the preaching of fundamental what Christianity preaches, which it does. And she was like, nope, we're not doing it. Like you said, they're peaceful, they're kind, they're willing to convert. We're not going to enslave these people, you know, unless they were, you know, like cannibals or something. If they're like savage man-eaters, then maybe we could reconsider. So on his second voyage, the tone of his reports just like completely shifts. So he's, you know, he's gone from, oh, they're peaceful. And now he's like, oh, they're these bloodthirsty, violent man eaters. And we've got to hunt them down and enslave them to work on these sugar plantations. Right. So it's like a completely different report. And it's very, well, it's very self-serving. He needed them to be peaceful because he wanted to pursue this exploration and settlement. Now he kind of needs them to be violent cannibals so that he can enslave them. That was kind of like, it's kind of like he took advantage of a cultural difference in order to justify enslaving them. And that's kind of how the whole sugar industry got started, which fueled all of slavery, really, and kind of built the Americas. It's pretty wild.
Wow. I am not really surprised because I was surprised because, like, I mean, in Italy, obviously, I mean, being Italian myself, Christopher Columbus is kind of like the person that discovered the Americas, right? And then people take a lot of pride in that. And then when I lived in the U.S., I even, like, found out that there is, like, a national holiday. And I was, like, a little surprised because it was, like, as far as I know, that is when everything bad happened. Like, literally, that's when the Europeans started to come over, when we started, like, enslave people, when eventually then we had to bring even more slaves from Africa. And I'm, like, that was the beginning of the end, really. And still, like Christopher Columbus is, like, seen as this, like, amazing figure. And I'm like, things have changed a little bit. I've heard, like, a little bit of controversy in the last few years. And yeah, and people were kind of, like, thinking more about it.
Yeah, Columbus Day is definitely more controversial now than it has been in the past. And a lot of people, there's even a push towards away from Columbus Day. And a lot of people now celebrate, like, an Indigenous Heritage Day on that, you know, actually celebrating the Indigenous people as opposed to the conqueror of the Indigenous people. He was like, it's crazy to me that for so long he was viewed as a hero. But when you really look at it, it's like, oh, actually, he was a bad guy. He was a bad guy, you know? He really did terrible things to a lot of people. Very self-serving, absolutely. So yeah, we see that with the reports. And that's, you know, those reports of, like, these violent cannibals in the Americas is kind of where that idea of, like, the savage cannibal tribesman comes from. And it really just came from a place of the Europeans controlling the narrative, recording what he needed it to be to justify what he wanted to do, really. So I found that super interesting. And one article that I read talked about, this was, like, the most eye-opening thing to me in this whole, all of this research that I did. They talked about the Wari tribe of Brazil and how to them, it was very shocking that the Europeans were burying their dead and letting them rot and get eaten by worms. Because in the Wari culture, they would, you know, they weren't killing each other, but after, like, say a loved one died, they would eat parts of that loved one. And that was a way to kind of keep that person with you and kind of keep them alive, like, through your body. Now they're, like, part of your body. You know, and to them, it's like, oh, you're burying them in the ground. You're letting the worms eat them. Like, that seems so. But it really blew my mind to get that little bit of the other perspective. And it was like, it was coming from a place of, like, respect and love and not, like, it wasn't like a violent crime. It was like, it was just different. It was just different culturally. And it's hard to see that until you really think about it from their perspective. You're like, oh, I mean, that kind of makes sense. Like, I get that. Like, keeping that person's sort of alive to an extent by making them part of you. But that was wild.
That is really interesting. Do you know if this still exists today, like, this type of tribes?
That is a good question. I really didn't look into, like, the modern. I feel like I've heard of, like, very remote islands that don't have any, like, exposure. I wish I could think of the name of, there's, like, one island, it's going to come to me later, that doesn't have, like, any contact with modern society. And I think that there might be, like, one or two tiny islands. Like, I, for the most part, I don't think so. I think, like, that taboo has pretty fully taken over and just kind of, I mean, and in general, like, there's not a ton of indigenous culture that has been able to survive because of the way that they were oppressed and, you know, forced to convert to European religions and cultures. So I don't think so, except for maybe like a tiny island here or there, but I didn't really look into that too much.
And then there is the third type, which I think is the one, you know, we all feel absolutely disgusted by. These are the psychos that eat people. And I remember actually listening to a podcast episode, a very, very famous podcast, is it Pod Chair or something? It's a chair podcast or something like that, where they were like interviewing a person, a cannibal. And I don't remember much because I listened to it like years ago. But I was like, why? What? So interesting. Obviously, he was in jail. And then I don't remember if the podcast was in while he was in jail or out of jail. But
yeah. Yeah. So there's like a few, you know, there's like some big examples like of serial killers like Jeffrey Dahmer and Albert Fish. And there's like some really like notorious ones. I read a study about where they're kind of looking into like the psychology behind it that I found really interesting. And they kind of, there was kind of like two different groups. Like they had some people that were in the study were schizophrenic. And they, all of them, it was a parent that they attacked and killed and then ate parts of. But it came out of almost like a, like they perceived that they were being threatened by that parent. And it came out of almost like a self-defense kind of thing. And then the other group was more, it was like an ego boost. Like it came at a time, they attacked someone at a time that they felt humiliated or like belittled, and they killed them. And it said like, so with the schizophrenic group, it was like they ate the flesh like raw and unprepared. It was just this very impulsive thing. And with the other group, it was some, I can't remember exactly. It was like they had some type of like personality disorder. I can't remember exactly what it was, but they like prepared it and like savored it, and more like your Jeffrey Dahmer and your Albert, and more like the serial killer type, where it was like they were getting some weird, like freaky ego boost, kind of like their fulfillment out of it. And I think part of that is just like so shocking. And I don't know, I guess like just hard for me to even like wrap my head around, but I guess just like doing something so wrong was like this weird self-esteem boost for them. It's really hard to try to make any sense of it, but it was an interesting study because it kind of showed like two different sides of that, where it comes from like this impulsive self-defense, I don't even know what I'm doing kind of thing, or like more thought out and intentional and egotistical in a creepy way.
Yeah, for sure. Do you remember any particular story that maybe we can go a little bit more in depth about any of them?
You know, I didn't really go super in depth. Like I listen to a lot of like true crime podcasts as well. And so I feel like every now and then I'll stumble upon, and I feel like you see it with like the big serial killers. I didn't really want to go super in depth on one of those stories because I feel like a lot of them do it for the notoriety. Like they want attention for it, and they want to be known as like this super depraved killer. And so I didn't really want to give them that. I almost felt like wrong giving them the notoriety and like the fame that they wanted. So I really didn't go super deep into any one particular story with the pathological for that reason. But I did find the psychology behind it pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think like the ego boost thing is really, really interesting. I remember reading a story of a guy who was working, I think, in a hospital or something, that would go and just like, and then he, that was just like a pathological, like a, he was just a psychopath, basically. And he would just go and eat like a little bit pieces of, he was working in pathology, I guess, or something.
Wow.
And he would go and eat like pieces of people who were dead or something, because he was like, yeah, I was just,
oh, wow.
Thought it was just me and I liked it.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
interesting. So that was okay. So we had the nutritional, we had the ritual, and then we had the pathological. And then I kind of discovered like a fourth, which I guess kind of fits into the nutritional, but I was thinking of it more as like a medicinal cannibalism, because I kept finding all these examples of human bodies being used as like nutritional supplements or medicine. One in particular that I did not know about was fairly widespread. So I didn't realize this, but for like centuries, up until like the early 1900s, people would eat powdered Egyptian mummy as like a medicine. Just like, what? So they were like getting mummies from Egypt and like powdering them up and like taking it as medicine. And it was like, said it was like a pain reliever. And I mean, it had like all these different uses that they were using it for. And there was like a, I came across an ad from like a pharmaceutical company from like 1908. You know, this was like not that long ago, where they're advertising powdered Egyptian mummy as like a form of medicine. And so I found that really interesting because the taboo existed at that time, because people did think of cannibalism as like wrong, and yet they kind of didn't see that, I guess, as cannibalism. But, you know, they were eating a body, but I guess it, in their minds, it was different. And then it got me thinking, you know, like, so I have a friend who's done this. So when you have a baby, you can choose to have the placenta, like, it's called encapsulated. She had it turned into like pills, like they dried it out and they powdered it and they put it into pills. And she like took the pills because it is very, it has a lot of vitamins and minerals. It's very nutritional. And she took it as like a nutritional supplement. And then I was like, well, you know, that's not that much different, I guess, than eating powdered mummy. I mean, it is, it's technically cannibalism that you're eating a human body. So I found that really, you know, it's still kind of a thing. But you see all these examples, like in ancient Rome, there were reports that they would get like the warm blood of a fallen gladiator, and they would like drink, and it was supposed to cure epilepsy. And so, but these are people, you know, the Romans and just Europeans and Americans, you know, all up until the early 1900s, they were very anti-cannibalism, and yet sort of medicinally, it was more accepted. So I found that really interesting, kind of hypocritical, you know, that they didn't see that as the same as what some of these other cultures were doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, to some extent, and I'm curious to know what you think, but to some extent, it kind of looks like the taboo is there for, depending on context, right? Which, you know, which makes sense, but a lot of things obviously like depend on context. But when it comes to humans, you use the word hypocritical because I feel like we accept some things and some things are taboo. We eat animals, but only certain type of animals. We eat maybe some parts of human, like the placenta, because it's your own body or whatever, which is whatever, you can do whatever you want. But we don't accept some other things, like, or maybe like we see it as more, even like just as now, like as we talked about it, I feel like some type of the cases that we talked about were deemed more acceptable than others. So I feel like, yeah, I mean, it all depends on context, but I feel like, what is your take on the taboo or on cannibalism in general today after all of these things and studies that you've done?
Right. Well, it was very eye-opening because I went into it, you know, just like, I get kind of like an icky feeling, you know, when I think about eating another human. Like, to me, it's like, oh, that's, it's wrong. I have that in me that it's wrong. But then after doing the research and kind of seeing, like, especially like this ritual cannibalism, you know, and how far back it goes into history and how it was being done in certain cultures as like this peaceful and respectful way to, you know, handle death and sort of deal with losing a loved one, like seeing that. And then also seeing the way that it was demonized for sort of ulterior motives by Europeans who had stood to gain from demonizing it, it really made me realize it's not so black and white. It's not like good or bad. It's all cultural, and it all comes from the reason why we think cannibalism is bad is because the culture that won is the, it thinks it's bad. You know, the culture that took over the world thinks it's bad. And then I think, you know, if it was the Wari or some other, you know, indigenous group from the Caribbean that took over the world, we might all be cannibals. We might not think that way. And it's just kind of like the culture that won is the one that, and that's the reason why we all think it's wrong, because of that dominant culture. So it just kind of made me realize there's a lot of gray area. It's not right and wrong or good and bad. It doesn't really work that way. It's kind of just, we kind of just decided that it was not okay to do. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it's not okay to do, like with the placenta or, you know, whatever. It's like, it's kind of a spectrum. So it just kind of made me realize that you need to really think for yourself and kind of make your own decisions about what you, you know, what's right for you and what you need to do and not just rely on like what everybody does and this is what we do, so I should do it this way. And, you know, not saying that we should be eating people or anything like that. But it's just kind of eye-opening that there's different perspectives and there's different ways of living and different ways of doing things. And we don't have to constrain ourselves to what the majority does just because it's the way that one. So I don't know. I feel like I gained a lot of perspective from researching it.
Yeah, for sure. Super interesting. Yeah, in my case, I don't eat any meat, so I'm safe in that sense. But I'm wondering, just like kind of like a last question, I'm just curious about this. If you were able to have on your podcast, because I thought about my podcast as well, a cannibalist or a person that has been through it or whatever, because you mentioned it, you didn't want to give voice to this psychopath people, obviously. Would you have a cannibalist on your podcast, for example, or not? And what would you ask this person if you did?
Oh, that's such a great question. That is such a great question. I wouldn't really want to give a voice to the psychopath type, but someone who had experienced like survival cannibalism or some other form where it, you know, wasn't quite such a crime. Yeah, I definitely would. Ideally, I would love to talk to someone who practices ritual cannibalism, but that's not really a thing. You know, it's not really like something that I could actually find someone. I think it would be more of a, oh my gosh, if I could interview like someone who had to do it for survival, that would be amazing. Even just to talk to someone, you know, who's like, who does the placenta, like I'd like to hear their thoughts about it. But yeah, if I could speak to like someone who did it for survival, I mean, I guess I would just want to know, oh, that's a great question. Just kind of how, I kind of want to know like how they feel about it after the fact, because I know, you know, going into that, like thinking about the having to do it, it's like, oh no, I can't, like, absolutely not. But after the fact, it's like, do you come to terms with it in a way? How do you make sense of it in your head? How do you heal? It's got to be a very traumatic experience to be forced to do something that you view as like fundamentally wrong or no or ooh. I think I'd want to know kind of how they've healed from that, you know, from that trauma and moving forward, like how do you make sense of that in a way that allows you to still go about your life and not just like fixate on it at all times. I think that would be a really difficult conversation, honestly. That'd be tough. Yeah, because when, you know, when it's just so that strong, it's that strongly ingrained in you. Yeah, I can't imagine having to do something like that. But yeah.
Yeah. I am super grateful for our conversation. Your podcast and everything about your, you know, your socials and stuff will be linked down below. Otherwise, yeah. Thank you so much for this.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Amazing. And to all of you, I will see you next week back with Taboo with Mimi, another episode. Thank you. Bye-bye.